Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Tom McGinnis on the Sixers Radio Network, courtesy of WPN.
Now the Sixers down low to Dario. Dario with a layup. He got it. He got inside position on Barnes. McConnell with a feed. And Dario Saric scores it.
And the Sixers won again last night. They beat the Sacramento Kings 122-119. Still coming up on the show today in just a few moments, Kevin Kugler from Westwood One and BTN. Final half hour, Bob Flounders from the Patriot News and PennLive.com. Tomorrow on the show, Kim Jones, NFL Network. Emily Kaplan from Sports Illustrated will join us on the show tomorrow. And also, we're looking to get James Franklin's press conference from National Letter of Intent Day to carry to you as well in the final half hour. Coming up on, Thursday, Jimmy Cephalo, the Dolphins play-by-play voice, Neil Coulong to join us to talk about the NFL, and Mike Conti on Friday, from the Falcons Radio Network, the host of the Falcons Radio Network, is going to join us. Did I miss anyone? Which is possible. So I was trying to do it off the top of my head.
Well, of course, Friday, 4:35, new tradition unlike any other.
And it is unlike anything else we do.
And we do our Super Bowl picks.
Absolutely.
Not that it'll matter with the standings, but you know, but we'll do it anyway.
Don't forget, 2 a.m. to 4 a.m., Sean in the Suit on the Experimental Channel.
That's why God created coffee. We're good.
That's why God created the Experimental Channel. WKOK 8. All right. Doing the show from a basement. Oh, wait. That's what I do now. What am I talking about? All right. Let's bring Kevin Kugler in. My old friend, it's great to have you with us again. And, of course, Dick Girardi, who has worked with you on TV before, wanted to pass along his best.
Oh, he's a wonderful man. I'm a huge Dick Girardi fan.
Yes. I mean, DJ is the best. I want to start with the NFL part first, Kevin, because you've done the Sunday Night Football package. Atlanta and New England. I want to get, first of all, your take on the Patriots. What, you know, we know about the Belichick-Brady part, but what are the other parts that maybe other people may not see that actually make them a quality team on top of the fact they've got the coach and the quarterback?
Well, it's that defense. I mean, look, you can talk about Brady, and he's obviously great, and you can talk about Belichick, and he's obviously a tremendous coach that has done a lot of wonderful things, but this team has been carried at times this year by its defense. I mean, you look back to the start of the season. When they went on the road, the first game out of the gate, they're playing with a backup quarterback on the road against Arizona, a team that at the beginning of the year was everybody's chic pick to be the Super Bowl favorite out of the NFC. They had fallen short in the championship a year ago, but my goodness, this team is on the rise. Here they come. They're going to be great. And You look at this defense, which is not a team that presents a ton of pressure. They don't do a whole lot of things where the statistics are just going to jump off the page at you. But all they do is they keep teams out of the end zone. They keep teams from scoring, and they win games. And they did that against Arizona in that opening game, and they've carried through the four games without Tom Brady. They've carried through the course of the season. Look, Tom Brady's been spectacular this year. But for me, and I think this comes into huge play this weekend when they're playing in an offense in Atlanta that is a spectacular offense. I mean, this offense is historically great, but you need a defense to perform, and that defense for the Patriots may be the most underrated Super Bowl defense that we've seen in a long time. Hardly anybody's talking about it. It's a really good defense.
In fact, when I watch the Patriots defense, you know, I really love the versatility of their linebackers. When you've watched them, the fact that they've got guys that can play two ways at that spot, what has that meant for them?
Well, it's allowed them to rotate guys through. It's allowed them to not carry, honestly, as many linebackers as other teams carry on a roster. It helps them shore up their back end because they don't need necessarily to have eight or nine linebackers like you see in a lot of different teams in the National Football League. So instead, the Patriots can keep 10, 11, 12 guys in their back end over the course of the season, and at times they've had that many back there, to shore up that area, play a little more versatility in the back end of the defense because you've got so much interchangeability with your linebackers. They don't need to carry that many. And look, roster flexibility is a big deal over the course of a regular season, and Bill Belichick has had a great the management of this Patriots roster, not only this year but over the course of the amazing run that the Patriots have been on, has been something that there'll be books written about this once this whole run comes to an end, because this league is built for parity. Pete Rozelle wanted a parity-driven league so that the fan of X team that has a bad year one year could have hope that next year their team was going to turn it around quickly, because this league was designed to do that. This league was not designed to see the maintenance of greatness like we've seen from the New England Patriots over the years. And whether you're a Patriots fan or a Patriots hater, and there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of middle ground when it comes to New England Patriots, whether you're a fan or a hater, you have to acknowledge what they've done roster management-wise has been pretty remarkable. Finding guys who were not expected to be great and turning them into really good players, squeezing a year or two out of a veteran that looked like he was done elsewhere, or getting rid of a veteran, which I think is an underrated aspect of roster management, getting rid of a veteran who may have a year or two left, but you get rid of him before he drags down the rest of the roster. The Patriots have been really good at that, too.
I've talked about that on the show many times, and I've always said that they've had the ability to understand the shelf life of the players that they have. And and that's, I think that's been the most remarkable aspect of what they've done in terms of a 17-year run. Now let's flip it to the other side. You mentioned that the Falcons' offense can be of historical proportions, but defensively, do they have enough, especially in that secondary? You know, now they play differently than the Steelers. They're a man team and not a zone team, but do they have enough?
I think they can have enough, but I think if you're going to see a Falcons Super Bowl champion, it's going to be because they outscored the New England Patriots.
Right.
This defense is, it's good, which it wasn't through the first 10 games of the season. I mean, if it were the defense that started the year and played through until the bye for the Falcons, you'd be really concerned about the pressure that's placed on this offense, because they were given a ton of yards and a ton of points, and they got to the bye and they kind of retooled things just a little bit. They got themselves back on better footing, and really over the last several games since that bye week, their points per game numbers down big, over 5 points per game. Their yardage numbers down 30 to 40 yards per game on average over the course of time since the end of the bye week. It's a better defense, and so now you have a defense that is good. Not great by any stretch of the imagination, but good is probably good enough in most instances the way this offense is playing right now, because the way Matt Ryan's throwing the football and the way Julio Jones is playing the wide receiver position, there's nobody better right now. Tom Brady's playing at an awfully high clip, but there's nobody playing better than that combination of Matt Ryan and Julio Jones.
We saw, though, in the Pittsburgh game, the great job that the Patriots did of making sure that Antonio Brown would not get close to hurting them. How much does it help Atlanta that Gabriel and Mohamed Sanu balance Julio Jones on the opposite side?
Huge. And this is what this Falcons offense does to you. 13 different guys have caught touchdown passes this year. So, all right, you limit Julio Jones. And they did that. The Packers did in that first meeting in the regular season that was a game won by Atlanta. Julio Jones had 3 catches for 29 yards, didn't have a touchdown. But Mohamed Sanu had a huge day. 9 catches, 84 yards. He caught 5 balls in the final drive. They go down and they win the game over Green Bay, a banged-up Packer team in the season. But still, you take Julio Jones out, you think, oh, this thing's over. So you've got Sanu, you've got Gabriel, 2 weapons at wide receiver that mitigate a little bit if you can limit what Julio Jones can do. And the other 2 guys that you have to talk about, whether you're talking about the run game or the pass game, the duo of Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman in the backfield, because those guys are so versatile that they can catch balls out of the backfield and did at a high clip this year. When they combine for 200 yards or more, this team is undefeated. They were 6-0 on the season when both Coleman and Freeman combined for 200 yards rushing receiving, which is something that sounds like, my gosh, that's a dramatically large number. But for those two guys, it really wasn't that hard to accomplish because Freeman's a terrific running back who catches it at about 500 yards on the season. Same with Tevin Coleman. We all saw him in the Big Ten Conference over the years. And
right.
You look at what Indiana has produced from a running back standpoint the last couple of years in the NFL, and you're stunned. Tevin Coleman and Jordan Howard, who had a great rookie year with the Chicago Bears this year. But Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman, to me, when you evaluate this Falcons offense, those guys are huge, especially if a defense can do to Julio Jones what the Patriots were able to do to Antonio Brown.
Kevin, I want to shift gears for a moment, and let's get to the Big Ten basketball part, because now you're making that tour as you do game by game here. A couple of teams that in person stood out to you and you thought, okay, there's a couple of separator teams in your mind in the conference.
Couple of separator teams. Wisconsin appears to be separating a little bit, and that shouldn't surprise anybody because what Wisconsin had coming back was better than what everybody else thought they had in the league this year. So it should come as no surprise to people that they're starting to separate themselves from this pack a little bit. They're experienced, they're good. The other separator team is Northwestern. Yeah. And I know that's goofy to say, and people hear that and they go, oh, this guy, what does this guy know? What? They're
Kevin,
good.
Kevin, I had their Big Ten opener here. I mean, and we saw it right away, how good they are. And I'll give you the point Doug Collins gave us. I didn't mean to interrupt your answer. When I talked to Doug Collins after the game, Dick and I talked with him, he said, look, the difference between what Chris has now and what Pat has, he says that he's got kids that are 3 years into his program and know the system like the back of their hand. Pat has freshmen. And I thought that was, of the points he made, that was the one that stuck out to me. I don't know where that jives with what you've seen.
100%. Look, if you have guys who are, and look, they have to have talent. I could grab five guys off the street, coach them for 3 years, and they'd be no better with me coaching them over 3 years than they were when it started. So you've got to have a good coach, and you've got to have talent. And they have that, and they have talent that's grown up in the system. And what's really impressive to me about this Northwestern team is that they have talent that all has a role, but a role that can change from game to game. Look at this last game, for example, that they won against Indiana. Sanjay Lumpkin comes up with a huge game, 15 points. And that's not easy work for Lumpkin because he's working against Thomas Bryant in the post, and we all who watch Big Ten basketball this year know what the kind of talent that Thomas Bryant is. He's a spectacular talent. He's an incredibly hard guard, and he's hard to score against because of his length. And as a shot blocker, he's really good. Lumpkin was so solid in the post against Thomas Bryant, puts 15 points on the board, his first game in double figures in conference play. There's somebody like that, it seems like, that sort of stepped up each night for Northwestern. You get your normal Scotty Lindsay's, Vic Long's having a nice run throughout the course of the season. But the two keys for me, Bryant McIntosh, how he distributes the ball, and if he can score, and the play of Derek Park, when they got him back from injury,
huge.
He changed that team. I mean, he's completely changed that team. I'm telling you, Northwestern, for people who have not watched them, they are for real. This is a real, legitimate NCAA tournament team and a team that can go a little ways in that tournament, too, because of the experience you talked about.
Is Purdue a Bryant McIntosh away from being that kind of team? To me, because I did the Penn State-Purdue game. It's the one thing that stuck out. Swanigan's great. Edwards is fabulous. But I still don't see a point guard that gets you past the Sweet 16.
And I think that's the thing that we saw cost them last year. Now, they're better against the press this year because last year that was the complete Achilles heel. Everybody saw it, and whenever anybody needed to get a stop, they pressed them, and they would turn it over. They're better against that this year. But this Purdue team, I like them a lot. I really do. They're a much better three-point shooting team than they've been in recent years, one of the best in the country.
Yep.
And that opens things up, obviously, for Swanigan and for Haas inside. So then, but you got to worry about Swanigan. So it's sort of a pick your poison against Purdue, and you hope they're not shooting well when you're trying to defend Swanigan, who seems indefensible right now. But this is they're a really solid team. We've got them tomorrow night against Northwestern, which I think is going to be a really intriguing game.
Yep.
And I just this feels like a really big game for Purdue because I was stunned that they lost to Nebraska. Nebraska was reeling. Nebraska didn't have any kind of health and doesn't have a whole lot of size on the inside anyway, but they still are without Ed Morrow. Michael Jacobson was taking IVs during the game and still trying to handle Swanigan and Haas down low. Purdue hits 14 threes and loses the game. They're an interesting team to me, but this feels like a huge game for Purdue on their home floor to try to beat Northwestern, a team that at the beginning of the year coming in, you probably didn't think, oh gosh, that's going to be a giant game to start February, but it really turns into that.
One final question, Kevin, then I'll let you go. Westwood won Sunday Night Football package, Big Ten football, BTN package, basketball, Final Four, College World Series. How important has it been, the change of sports, in keeping you fresh?
Oh, it's huge. You know this. I mean, as somebody who, you know, I love football season. I mean, I love football, love calling it. But it's nice when basketball season comes. It's nice to get a different sport in there. It does renew you a little bit. You get them, for example, even right now, I just did my last football game this past weekend. The Pro Bowl just wrapped up my football schedule, and right. I know most of your listeners were glued to the radio for the Pro Bowl over the course of the weekend, because why wouldn't you be? And it was nice when that got done, and it's honestly nice for my wife as well, because it sort of feels like, all right, you've hit a finish line. You've come across the finish line now for football. Now basketball season is really the only focus you have for the next couple of months, and it is nice. It helps renew you a little bit, gives you a little extra vigor, a little spring in your steps. Like, all right, now it's basketball. Let's go full board. Now, I've been doing basketball since mid-November, so it's not like this is brand new, but right. It's just sort of a little splash of water in the face to kind of wake you up and go, all right, new stuff now. It's all just hoop for the rest of the way.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate it very much. Look forward to crossing paths soon.
I will. I'll see. You know what? You and I will spend Valentine's Day together. That's your dream right there. Valentine's Day with Kugler in Lincoln, Nebraska. Congratulations.
Feel like I won the lottery.
Yeah. You can imagine how my wife feels.
Yeah, imagine how mine feels.
Hey, Kevin, see you, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
Kevin Kugler. That was a scary thought. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. As we continue, Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com, final half hour of the show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to be with you on this Tuesday. And Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. Next half hour tomorrow, Kim Jones, NFL Network, and Emily Kaplan from Sports Illustrated will join us. Emily works on MMQB with Peter King and is a Penn State graduate. Worked for the Collegian for, was at the Collegian for a long time. Long time. 4 years there, and then got out and got a big break right away with MMQB. And she's the one that wrote the story about Aaron Andrews battling back from not only the trial, but cervical cancer. That was her story, her baby all the way. She also wrote about the NFL D-League in California. It was at the Senior Bowl, too, so we'll get a wide perspective from her on what she's seen. Matt Leon, also from Philadelphia. Coming up on Thursday, Jimmy Cephalo, the Dolphins play-by-play announcer. Neil Coulong is going to join us on the show. Friday, Mike Conti, Falcons Radio Network, and my brother. Also tomorrow, we're looking to carry the James Franklin press conference on National Letter of Intent Day. So it's one full plate after another. One full plate after another. We'll do tomorrow's show, by the way, from Bloomington. Bloomington tomorrow. Penn State plays at Assembly Hall tomorrow night. It's Indiana at 6:30 tomorrow, 6 o'clock the airtime. Penn State 4-5. Indiana's also 4-5 in conference play. Indiana better overall record at 14-8, including wins over North Carolina and Kansas. Penn State 12-10. But you know what? I don't think a lot of people realize this. You do know Indiana started 8-1 this year. That one loss was to Fort Wayne. They're only 6-7 since. And it's not as if they've been, that Assembly Hall's been a fortress. They lost to Nebraska there. Final half hour, Bob Flounders, Patriot News, and PennLive.com. We'll talk about Penn State recruiting and the Nittany Lion football program. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
On Pleasant Mills. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports bozos of the day. Plural. I'm a big fan of both guys. I'm a big fan of Sir Charles, and I'm a big fan of LeBron. Well, I mean... Now, what's interesting is that I've heard people go, "Phew," when he says, "I don't have one of my top five players of all time." Do you see who his top five players are? Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Oscar Robertson, Will Chamberlain. Well, gee, I'm sorry. That's not bad. People of today... The young people of today live so much in the today world, they have no concept of history at all. No, and it's just sad to see, but it's true. But Sir Charles gets into a beef, a tiff, an argument. What was the other one you used? An exchange?
Spat.
A spat. They are the Lawrence and McGranahan of the NBA. Yeah, no. I'm trying to localize the story. The back and forth, this, that. Wow. All right. Time now for Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. Bob, first of all, it's great to have you on the show. And all of this recruiting news really... started with your predecessor and at one point your colleague at the Patriot News, and that's Ronnie Crist. Ronnie is the first one that really delve into it and get into it. Where has it gone from there?
It's you're right. I can remember when I came to the Harrisburg Patriot News, and I heard how Ronnie actually kind of was really the person that got the ball rolling with regard to, you know, serious pursuit of Penn State recruiting specifically, but Pennsylvania recruiting, and, you know, in the last 25 or 30 years, it's gotten crazy. So, yeah, it's just been, you're trying to get information, you know, with Penn State. There's still a couple of kids that Penn State may end up getting as we talk, and they're big names, so the fan base is pretty juiced. I believe there's going to be some announcements tomorrow. The mere fact that, you know, Penn State has a signing day event, you know, in the morning, and you look at what Jim Harbaugh is doing at Michigan, and he's got celebrities showing up, and it's a big deal. But yeah, it's every bit as important as, you know, like a Penn State Ohio State game week in a lot of ways, because it's you know, what happens tomorrow will good or bad will set the course or help set the course for the next 3 or 4 years. So it's a really big capper to a really, I'm sure, just a brutal grind for James Franklin and his staff. And I'm sure they'll be a little bit nervous tomorrow morning about, you know, you're never quite sure until the signatures start coming in.
For me, I feel like this is finally the first time where they not only have positional balance, which I felt they achieved last year, Bob, but now finally a class balance. Is that how you're looking at it, too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you just look at the players that Penn State lost that were seniors or fourth-year juniors. There just weren't that many names, you know. And you look, you know, this Penn State's now going to get to the point where, you know, if Penn State recruits well, you know, every year it's going to be like what Ohio State and Alabama and LSU go through. They're going to lose, you know, 8 to 10 really good players and 15 to 20, you know, contributors, but they're going to have guys that are, you know, that are ready or close to being ready to step in with a strong spring. And they have been out of balance the last couple of years, and now it looks like after this class comes in, you know, for years to come, they're going to be a lot more balanced. The last 2 years, they've been very young. Other teams have been as well. But it's going to be nice to see them now have a stronger, deeper senior class or a stronger, deeper, you know, fourth-year junior class. And that's something that James and his staff really couldn't count on, you know, the two previous years.
It's interesting. We've talked about the SEC West and the Big Ten East being the two dominant divisions in college football. And when you look at recruiting in the top 10, six of them reside there, three from the Big Ten East and three from the SEC West. How closely do you try to follow, Bob, or the paper try to follow what Ohio State and Michigan does in conjunction with Penn State?
Oh, yeah, it's a big deal. And we follow it because that's what the readers, they want to know about it, too. I mean, Ohio State is a national story because of the signing class they're putting together. And they might actually, I believe, Steve, get another huge, there's a chance they might get another coveted prospect tomorrow out of Texas. But Urban Meyer, you know, they can turn the corner quickly with the way that they recruit. And I think it's interesting to note this year, Steve, because not only has Ohio State and Michigan recruited well, but Penn State's got a very good class as well. And I think, you know, if things fall Penn State's way, in the 2018 class, and there's obviously a lot of hurdles to cross there, but and they're young kids, so you don't know, but they could be talking about Penn State's class, you know, a year from now. You know, it could be in the same conversation with what they're talking about with Ohio State's 2017 class. And yes, absolutely, it is a competition, and we can't pretend that it's not. And I think that my gauge from the Penn State fan base is they want to know how Penn State's doing first and foremost. But you know, 1A of it is well. So what is Urban Meyer? What are Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh doing? And it looks like Maryland's got a good recruiting class as well.
You're a professional, so you try to take a pros approach every step of the way through this. But have you had to change your mindset on what you're seeing now based on what you saw last season? Has that now changed how you look at what Penn State's doing and how they're putting it together?
Yes, I think so. I think the two things that changed the most for me last year were they finally were able to install an offense, that a dangerous offense that was capable of doing damage on just about anyone. And they had the athletes to execute it at the right spots. I'm not sure that was the case in 2014 and 2015. I think they had some, but not all. And the other thing that I think has changed for me is they've become, and I think this is really going to help them moving forward, they've become much more well-rounded, much more proficient, and much more capable in the kicking game. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but if you look at what really cost Penn State, you know, during James Franklin's early first couple of years at Penn State, that they just didn't have the same talent, it looked like to me, in that phase of the game, and it hurt them every time they played a good team. So this is now a team that is got the right people in the right spots in the important aspects of the game. And I do think now that this is a team that moving forward, as they continue to establish depth, which is also going to be key, I do look at them a lot differently. I remember at this time last year, I was not positive that they were going to be, you know, the fourth best team in the Big Ten East. I thought they were a clear force behind those three, and it just wasn't the case. And now you look what they've done and what they can do and some of the people they have coming back, this is definitely a team that I think it's right for the Penn State fan base to be excited about the next couple of years.
And finally, by the fact there's going to be the usual signing day that James Franklin puts together, mm-hmm. does that make it easier for you to cover along the way, or does it also bring with some challenges because there are angles to explore?
I think the rule of thumb, if you're going to cover the Penn State team, is the more access, the better. So
right.
I think it's great. That there's an event, I think there's a limited event in the morning, but then he'll then come back, early in the afternoon. I think it's like 2:30, 2:00. And he does meet with the press. And I believe tomorrow there'll be some assistance made available as well. And it's just, what you find is James is the big picture guy, and he'll talk about the class, and what he likes about it, and you'll be able to get some questions with him. But also, I think it's almost as interesting to hear the assistants talk as well, because they can really provide some color and some detail into just what went into them getting the kid, how hard was it to get them, what all was involved, and what they think of him. And it really shed some light into an area that they're 10 years ago. That really wasn't in the works for Penn State. They just didn't really do that, and you were just kind of left to wonder about the 4- and 5-star recruiting rankings and whether or not how much they really meant. And now you get to hear, the assistants kind of put, their thoughts out there about just why they like these kids.
Bob, it's always a pleasure. Appreciate the time as always, my friend.
Okay, take care, Steve.
Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. We'll wrap up today's show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, National Letter of Intent Day is tomorrow. Right now, many feel Penn State's in that top 10 range somewhere, top 15 range somewhere in recruiting. And now we'll see how the journey plays out. It's rankings are fine, stars are fine. They get people initially excited about what you're getting. There's no question the players they're getting are very talented. Positionally fit very well with what they're doing. And now we'll deliver a class balance where you're not so overloaded from one class to the next. You're overloaded on freshmen as opposed to only having a handful of seniors. Well, now you're going to have balance the next few years. They'll really have the complete balance of that maybe a year from now, but they're almost there now. So that's no longer an issue. They've got the positional balance. That's no longer an issue. Now they've got a class balance, so that really is no longer an issue. All pluses. I mean, now you got to see how it plays out, how it pans out. And some guys will end up surprising you a little bit. Some guys will have injuries that derail them a bit. Some will take longer to develop than others, but then may turn out just fine and do a good job and be contributors to what's going on. And then some others may struggle. It is a big leap from high school to college. That's why when you see the Saquon Barkleys of the world, they really are remarkable, because they make that transition from one level to the next with complete and relative ease. It's not that easy to make that transition in any sport. And then the jump from college to the NFL, I mean, that's a chasm. I mean, that's the best of the best right there. And that's what some people struggle with. After being the top dog, the big man all the time in not only your own team and your own locker room, but in games. Most times these guys are the best players out there, and they're hard to handle. Well, suddenly you get on a practice field. I don't mean a game, but you get on a practice field, and the talent's comparable. Wow. Now you find out what you really got. You find out where you need to improve. You find out where you need to be better. You find out that it's a tougher road than people realize. And it's not easy. When the talent's comparable, and you're adding in having to hit the books, especially, you know, schools such as Penn State, where academics mean a lot. Community service means a lot. Time management means a lot. It's a place where the quarterback, Trace McSorley, for example, gets teammates together, as does John Reed, gets teammates together on the off day Monday, and they watch film. So that when they get to work on Tuesday, they're ready. That's what you have here. So National Letter of Intent Day is critical because that's the lifeblood recruiting is of any program. And for Penn State, the recruiting of James Franklin has given them a roadmap back to where they're a Big Ten championship team and playing in a New Year's Six bowl game. Some of those players, you know, there are a couple that were recruited initially by Joe Paterno's staff, four of them. You know, some of the, I mean, all the seniors obviously were recruited by Bill O'Brien. But now the vast majority of what you have is James Franklin and his staff. And they've been able to get more speed across the board, more speed at linebacker, more speed at defensive end, more speed at wide receiver, more speed in the secondary. They've done that. It's made a big difference. I know they want a game breaker in the return game, very, very much. But they've been able to get themselves back in this spot because of the first Wednesday in February in each of the last 4 years. They've recruited. This is the fourth class James Franklin's brought in. They've been able to put themselves back into the national ball game by what they've been able to accomplish the first Wednesday in February in each of the three previous years, plus what they've been able to do with them developmentally on the practice field. There's no longer that lingering, and it's a characterization I hated because I'm around it all the time, and when you go to as many practices as I go to, you know who can coach, and you know who can't. Because you're there all the time. I'm there every day. Well, I always used to hear, well, he can recruit. He can recruit. And I kept telling everybody, no, he can also coach. And the difference is that I see where the coaching takes place on the practice field. They are really good teachers. They also were clever in their first 2 years with some solutions they had to come up with because they didn't have the depth. And it happened this year, too, because when the three offensive tackles went out, they said, okay, we're deep at guard. Which one of the guards can we move over and then move a guard up? And that's when they took Ryan Bates, made him a left tackle. Okay? That's coaching. That's problem solving. And they did that to the tune of an 11-3 record, including 9-1 their last 10 games. But it all started with, really, I mean, recruiting now. I mean, they're already getting verbals on. They've been getting verbals on 18 and 19 now for months. The basketball's doing the same thing. They just offered a sophomore. I mean, basketball just offered a sophomore that would be part of the 19 class. It's the way it is now. You've got to be in this thing all the time. I mean, recruiting is that kind of cycle. It is round the clock. I mean, I don't know, and I don't have any answer on how to control it. An early signing period in football is fine in mid-December, which is what they're talking about. That's great because those individuals who just are not going to change their mind, just let them sign. Just get the process done. That's fine. I'm perfectly fine with that. But, you know, I believe junior weekend's coming up this weekend. So, in other words, you get the signing on Wednesday. Oh, by the way, the juniors are coming in this weekend. Something like that, schedule-wise.
That's the way it is. And Penn State's not back where it is and is and giving you the thrills that you had over the last 6 months without what they've been able to do the first Wednesday in February and then the job they've done developing the talent. You can have great talent. It still needs to be developed. That's why I've told this story a couple different times. I told it with Peter King when he was on the show last week. I'll never forget that night down at Letterman's, which back then was Damon's. And I'm hosting the show with Bill O'Brien. And this fan asked Bill a question about developing quarterbacks. He said, of course, you didn't really have to coach Brady. And Bill, he did a burn that was deep that night. And he handled the question with class, but he was mad. And he and I had a little talk about it that night and had a little talk about it the next day. Just him venting. It wasn't anything other than that. People don't understand, for whatever reason, even though we say there are certain things you can't coach, which is true, the great ones actually do want to be coached. They do want to be told what they're doing wrong and correct it.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.
Coming down 3-2-1. Hi, everybody. Steve Jones coming up on Sean in the Suit. Up with People will join them to talk about the Super Bowl VII halftime show. That's 2 to 4 a.m. on W.